Hey guys, welcome to Telling the Told and Untold. My name is Soho. Before we go straight into today's case, I do have a content warning to give you guys. In this video, we do talk about is assault, and this case does involve gang rape. So if that's not something you think you're interested in watching, then this video probably isn't for you. So maybe you can watch some of my other videos or just wait for my next upload. For today's case, we're going all the way to Kensington in Johannesburg, which lies on the east of Bloemfontein and Johannesburg CBD. On the 17th of October 2015, which was a Saturday, a group of five men were sitting outside a hair salon and they were sharing a bottle of brandy. They were on Poseidonhout Street in Yeovil, which is about a 10-minute drive or an hour walk to Rhodes Park in Kensington. They would go to Rhodes Park because that is where they would work. They would go there and they would mug people in and around the park. That's literally just what they did for a living. And on this particular afternoon, they decided to go to work. They got to Rhodes Park at around 5:30 that afternoon. And once they got there, they met another group who was also there for work. And the two groups then just decided to combine and become one. And this made the group of men 12. The group of 12 men just sat around the park and they were just waiting, looking for an opportunity. Around this time, the sun was still setting, so it was still pretty light outside and there were lots of groups in the park. So they knew that they couldn't strike then and they couldn't get to work. So they just had to wait for the groups to just leave the park and for it to be a bit darker and more quiet and just less people so that they could do what they needed to do and then get out of the park. As the group of men sat there drinking and waiting, they saw a group of four people approaching them. There were two men and two women. It was Caesar Cheki and his wife Sipogazi, as well as Zukisa Kela and his wife Jabumbata. And the two couples just decided to go to Rhodes Park that afternoon for an evening stroll before they started the week. They had went to church earlier that morning and they had Sunday lunch. They were relaxing and just decided that this was a good time to go to the park. They knew that the park wasn't necessarily safe, but they thought that because it was a Sunday, it was in the afternoon, the sun was still setting, it was pretty safe as compared to like walking in the park at like 9 p.m. So the two couples just decided to go to Rhodes Park. And because they also knew that it wasn't necessarily safe and also they just wanted to save at the moment, they decided to leave their personal belongings behind and valuables. The only person who had something on them was Caesar. Caesar had his cell phone and one of the women had a gold ring. I'm not too sure which one, but that's all the two couples had on them. The group of men saw these two couples and they all just kind of looked around, looked at each other and shared a knowing look, and then they went to the two couples. The couples were then surrounded by 12 men. A few of the men had weapons, there were knives, and there was also a replica gun. I don't know if it was just like a toy gun or if it was a BB gun, but it wasn't a real gun. But the two couples didn't know that. And there was just a lot going on. It was very chaotic. They were shouting different things. They were just contradicting each other, like sit down, you know, stand up, asking them questions, but one is telling them to keep quiet. It was just very chaotic. But in all of that was happening, there was just one voice that seemed to take the lead, not only for the two couples, but also for the group of men. And this voice just shouted for the two couples to lie down on the ground. And they did just that. They laid down flat on the ground and then they told them to take out all of their valuables. And they only managed to get Caesar's cell phone that he had on him and the gold ring. And that was it. And because they didn't get any valuables, the group of men were really mad. They were really upset. And everything that happened afterwards can only be described as a nightmare. The women were then sexually assaulted and their husbands forced to lay nearby, unable to do anything. As some of the men were sexually assaulting the two women, others pulled off items of clothes and bound their husbands' hands and feet. Sipokazi and Jabu cried out for their husbands, Sizwe and Zukisa, and they were just unable to do anything. The men then took their knives and cut the women's underwears off, whilst others held knives to their necks and were threatening them. The man that had taken the lead then shouted that because they didn't have any valuables on them and they weren't able to take anything, the men would take blood instead. And the two women watched in horror as some of the men picked up Sizwe and Zukisa and led them to the water. There was a lake at Rhodes Park. They then carried the men towards the lake, and the two women were still being sexually assaulted as all of this was happening. And they were just shouting and crying and just trying to do something to get to their husbands. Their husbands were also fighting, trying to just free themselves from the men's grip, but they were unable to. The women then listened in horror as they heard water splashing, and they knew that their two husbands had been thrown into the lake. And what made it even worse was that the two men couldn't even swim, and their hands and legs were bound together. You could hear the men screaming, you could hear water splashing, them trying to do something. The woman was screaming whilst they were still being sexually assaulted. And then one of the men started praying, and that's all he could do. The woman heard him praying, and they too joined in. They were crying. All three of them were praying, and they prayed and prayed until the men went quiet and the splashing stopped. When the mugging had turned violent, some of the men had run away because they wanted to take no part in what was happening, but still a lot of them still remained. The men started out as 12, and when some of them ran away, they were left with 8 men. After the splashing had stopped, the 8 men who remained were laughing. They just laughed at the two women, and they said to them, why were your husbands so stupid enough to go swimming in the lake instead of a swimming pool? Across the park, there was a man whose name is Thomas, and Thomas was working at Rhodes Park Bowling Club. Thomas had heard something strange that evening, but he couldn't figure out what it was, but it really unsettled him, so much so that he took a chair and then he climbed on the chair and looked over the wall towards the park just to hear where the strange noise was coming from. He looked towards the lake and he saw a head above the water, and it wasn't moving, and there were bubbles all around it. And then he looked towards the land part of the park, and he saw two women on the floor and a group of men surrounding them. And immediately he knew that something was wrong and he had to do something. He then ran to his boss and he told his boss to call the police, and they really struggled. Like, people's phones were off, people's phones were in charge. They were literally just scrambling, trying to look for a phone. Like, you know when you like in a rush and you're just trying to do something and everything that could possibly go wrong goes wrong. That's what happened that evening. And eventually they managed to get a phone, and as Thomas tried calling the police, the line said that it was engaged, and he also only had 5 rand airtime. So then he decided to send his cousin a please call me, and his cousin is a police officer, which is why he sent his cousin the please call me. And as he was waiting for his cousin to call him back, he decided to run to the park just to go see if there was something that he could do just to try and help these two women that he could obviously see were in danger. And as soon as he got to the park, the men were gone, and he found the two women, and the two women were completely distraught. He couldn't understand what they were saying. They were just pointing to the lake. They were crying. They were screaming. You know, he eventually managed to figure out what they were trying to say. And at this point, his cousin had called him. So he was on the phone with his cousin and kind of relaying what the woman was saying to him to his cousin on the phone. And soon they heard sirens and an ambulance and police officers arrived on the scene. Like Thomas, the police and the paramedics couldn't understand what Sipokazi and Jabu were trying to say to them, but eventually they kind of gathered what had happened, and they immediately knew that their husband Sizwe and Zukisa had not survived and that they were most likely deceased. But they didn't want to tell the woman that yet. They just wanted to wait until they had retrieved their bodies. So they kind of just looked at them with a knowing sad look that the women were going to receive terrible news in the next coming hours. The women were then taken to a hospital and then afterwards taken to the police station. One of the women had been sexually assaulted both digitally as well as with the man's lower region, whilst the other woman had only been sexually assaulted digitally. And at that point, she didn't know that it constitutes as rape as well. And because of this, she hadn't told the people at the hospital or the police until, like, I think a couple of hours later or a couple of hours into her statement being taken. And only when police officers explained that there are a lot of things that constitute as rape, including being sexually assaulted digitally, did she understand the full extent of what had happened to her. And at that point, when she had discovered that she had also been raped, they couldn't conduct a rape kit. While the women were at the police station, a team of police divers had arrived at Rhodes Park, and large spotlights were placed on top of the police cars to light up the water. And as soon as they saw the water, they knew that even if someone could swim, and they were a relatively good swimmer, they probably wouldn't have survived being thrown into the lake because of all the vegetation and just the way that the water moved. So the fact that the men couldn't swim and they were also tied up, they knew that there was just no chance of survival. The divers then jumped into the water and they carefully searched the lake, trying to find the bodies of the two men. And at 9 p.m., they found Cesar's body. They pulled him out of the water, they photographed him, and then they jumped back into the water to try and find Zukisa's body, which they did 2 hours later. The two women were then informed that their husbands did not survive and the two men were deceased. The next morning, a large team of investigators were called to the park, and the lead detective was horrified when he had heard what had happened to the two women the night before. And he was just so horrified that men could do this to them. And he knew that this case was going to be challenging because it was a random attack, and random attacks are one of the hardest things to solve because police don't necessarily know where to start or what to do first. And the fact that it wasn't just one or two men, but 12 men who were involved, made it even harder. Immediately, the lead detective knew that he had to get help from the public, so he got in touch with police stations in and around the area so that those officers could talk to their informants, so that their informants could maybe, you know, listen, just hear what they could hear on the streets, hear what they could hear, or just find out anything from people on the streets and just try and get any information they could to the lead detective so that they could try and find the men that were involved in this horrific attack. Constable Lufo Nosono was curious about the Rhodes Park murder cases. He was based in the Yeovil police station and he hadn't been assigned the case, but he had grown up in Kensington, so he felt a bit closer to the case, like it hit home for him. So because of this, he started doing his own kind of investigation when he wasn't working at the Yeovil police station and he had days off or he had some hours to spare. He would investigate, he would go to Kensington, he would knock on the residents' doors asking them questions about the case. And because he was from Kensington, he knew some of the people there and they also felt more comfortable talking to him. And because of this and all of his investigating and asking people questions, 3 days after what had happened at Rhodes Park, he received a phone call from one of the residents. And this resident told him that he lived near Rhodes Park, and on the day of the murders and around the same time, he caught some people on his CCTV cameras. He has CCTV cameras by his house, like on his house, showing the outside of his house. I hope I'm making sense. Yeah. And he caught a group of men running down the street. So he gave it to Constable Sono. Constable Sono looked through the footage and immediately he knew that these 8 men that he saw on the CCTV footage were involved in the Rhodes Park murders. And because of this, he got the footage, he took some stills, and he gave it to the lead detective. And the lead detective then decided to put him on the case officially after the stills were released to the media and given to informants so that they could try and identify some of the men. One of the men was almost immediately identified by a local informant who recognized the man as Thabo Nkala, who is 26 years old at the time of the case. Thabo had previously been in jail for robbery. He was there for 2 years and he was recently released. He had been released only a couple of months earlier, and the address that he had given the Department of Correctional Services when he was released turned out not to be his. The people who lived there claimed that they did not even know a Thabo Nkala. And after this, a hunt started to try and locate him. I do have some thoughts on that, that the only reason why they realized that Thabo did not actually live there was because they were looking for him to arrest him for 2 murders and for counts of sexual assault. But had that not happened, would they have known that he doesn't live there and that's not his actual address? Even though he was on parole, so they should have known that. I digress. Anyways, they started looking for him and eventually they did locate him. They also released the stills to the media to try and find the other people in the videos, and informants and the public managed to identify 3 other people in the stills. On the 1st of November, Thabo Nkala was found in Yeovil and he was arrested. He later claimed that as soon as he was arrested, his rights had been violated and he had been beaten by some of the police officers, and they had given him information that he should say in his confession. So in Thabo's confession, he gave the police officers 3 other names, 3 people that were involved in the case. He also said that he was present for the entirety of what had happened that night at Rhodes Park, but he had only been involved in the robbery. He had not been involved in the sexual assault and he had not been involved in the murders. He named some of the people involved. He named Admore Ndlovu, who was 24 years old at the time, Mduduzi Lawrence Matibela, who was 33 years old at the time. The 4th man has never been named to the public and we'll get into that a bit later. And the 5th man, he didn't know his real name. He only knew the guy's nickname. All of the people he named were the group from Yeovil, the one that were drinking on the 17th of October on Bazaydenhout Street and were sharing that bottle of brandy. So that's why he knew all of their names. He didn't say any of the other group's name, like the 6 people that, or 7 people rather, that they joined later on at Rhodes Park. He didn't mention any of their names. I don't think he knew them, or he just didn't say their names for some reason. Thabo's confession started with him being released from prison in August 2015. He said that as soon as he was released, he called someone that he knew, who he calls Small, and he called Small up and asked Small if, you know, he could give him some food, some clothes, maybe a job. And then him and Small started hanging out, and whilst they were hanging out one night, Small introduced him to a group of other guys, and these are their nicknames. There was Stanley, Brian, JJ and Mdu, and they were all just there drinking beer. And this is when the group told him that their job was to commit robberies normally at Rhodes Park. Mdu was Mduduzi and JJ was Admore, and the other 2 men, we still don't know who their real names are. And he said that after he met these men, the whole group started working together and committing robberies. And it was this group of men that he was with when they entered Rhodes Park on the 17th of October, that fateful night. The names Thabo had given police officers were also the names that the public and informants had given police officers before Thabo's confession. So it kind of just confirmed that Thabo's confession was true, or some of it was true, especially the names that he had given. And after his confession, Thabo was charged with robbery, 2 counts of murder and 2 counts of rape. And because of his confession and the names that he had given, police were then able to release better images of the wanted men. And after these images were released to the public on the 12th of November, Admiral Ndlovu was arrested, and his confession corroborated with Thabo's confession. And both of the men said that it was Nduduzi who had killed Sizwe and Zukisa. A couple of days later, on the 20th of November, Thabo's bail application was denied, and it turned out that Thabo was actually a Zimbabwean national who was in the country illegally. And it also turned out that Admiral was also in the country illegally, and this is probably why he didn't apply for a bail application, because of what had happened to Thabo. Both men were held in custody as police officers tried to find the other men who were involved in the Rhodes Park murders, and this was because they wanted all of the men involved to be tried at the same time. They didn't want there to be multiple different trials. They didn't want to re-traumatize Sibokazi and Jabu, because if there were multiple trials, then the woman would have to testify multiple times, and it would just be this never-ending thing. So they just wanted it to be one trial so that it could be done and dusted just once off. And they also told the media to keep releasing the images of the men that they were still looking for, and still like showing the stills that they had from the CCTV footage. And this paid off, because in December there was a member of the public who was in Pretoria at an embassy. He was trying to get a visa, and whilst he was there, he saw one man, and he was looking at this man, and he was like, this man looks a bit familiar. And he realized that this was one of the men that he had seen on TV, because this man was wanted in connection with the Rhodes Park murders. And because of this, he kind of like walked out of the embassy, and he flagged down a police car. And he told the Brooklyn police that there was this man inside the embassy trying to get a visa, and he was convinced that it was one of the men involved in the Rhodes Park murders. As soon as the police saw this man, they agreed with this member of the public, and then they arrested him, and they were right to do so, because they had arrested the third man, who was Nduduzi Lawrence Matibele. With three men in custody, the NPA decided that it was time for the trial to begin. And this was because they couldn't let the police like just keep looking for the other men. While police could keep looking for the other men, but it is the right of people that have been arrested to have a speedy trial. So it was kind of like they can't keep the men waiting as they try to find the other men, because they don't know how long that will take, and the men have the right to a speedy trial. So it was just a lot of things happening. So they just decided that the men just have to go to trial now, even if it was just three of them out of 12 or 8. During the trial, a shop owner testified that two men, Mduduzi and Thabo, approached him around 7 p.m. So this was 30 minutes after the horrific attack, and the men had sold him a cell phone. This cell phone belonged to Sizwe, and about an hour after these two men had given him the cell phone, he had sold the cell phone to someone else after overriding the password. He had given Thabo and Nduduzi 320 rand for this cell phone. The reason why he testified in court was because he didn't want to be arrested for having purchased stolen goods, so that's why he testified. It also emerged that the gold ring that the group of men had taken from one of the women was sold at a gold exchange in Rocky Street that same night, and for that the men got 150 rand. Mduduzi then gave one of the other men, whose nickname is Cosmo, and Admore 50 rand each, and then he and another man left without getting any money. So in total, the group only got about 470 rand, and there were like 8 of them at the end of this. So 470 rand to 8 men is just... They had also taken one of the men's shoes because the shoes looked really good. Like, you know, they were like polished. They looked clean. They looked very expensive because when the two couples had went to the park that afternoon, they were still dressed in their church clothes. So they were dressed very nice, prim and proper, you know, looking very stunning and pretty. So they took the shoes expecting it to be something worth a lot of money. But once they looked at the shoes after the two men had run and they had left Rhodes Park, they realized that the shoes were pretty old and that I'm not too sure who was wearing these shoes between Cizwe and Tsukisa, but they looked at the shoes and they realized that the shoes were pretty old, so they just kind of like threw them away and were like, oh, we just took shoes for nothing. During the trial, police officers were contacted by officials in Zimbabwe and they said that they had arrested a man who was wanted in South Africa. This man was trying to cross the border between South Africa and Zimbabwe illegally, so he had been arrested, and once they arrested him, they realized that, oh, this man is wanted in connection with the Rhodes Park murders. So they called the South African police and they just asked the police what they should do with this man, whether they should release him, whether they, like, you know, should take him back to South Africa to the police so that he could stand trial. But because the trial for the three other men was already happening, they knew that they had to wait for that trial to end before this trial could start. But also the Zimbabwean officials wanted the SAPS to agree to this man getting a speedy trial, so they wanted to know that as soon as this man is taken back to South Africa, he will stand trial almost immediately. And the police knew that they couldn't do that, like they knew that it would take some time, so they spoke to the woman about it. After consulting the woman, they then decided to just release the man, and after this he has never been arrested, or rearrested rather, for the crimes that took place that horrible Saturday evening. And that is why we do not have his name, and he's just out there living life. On the 28th of March 2017, Admore Ndlovu, Umduduzi Lawrence Matibele, and Thabo Nkala were all found guilty and given 4 life sentences and an additional 15 years for robbery. They will be eligible for parole in 2040. The remaining 5 suspects, who are believed to be foreigners, are apparently hiding in Zimbabwe. And that's it for today's case. There is a little justice and a lot of injustice for Sipokazi and Jabu. The last update we received from the two women is that one of them is married and one is in another relationship, and both of them are working with different NGOs to help support both women, men, and children who have been traumatized by gender-based violence, and just helping them rebuild their lives just as they have. And yeah, thank you guys so much for watching. Please don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. It really helps my channel out a lot. And yeah, I'll see you guys next time. Bye.